Some of these beings would predate upon humans, deriving some kind of chemical food from the bodies or blood of their terrified contactees. Others could shapeshift and manipulate the senses of those who encountered them. Their interests in humanity appeared to range from a desire to nurture human intelligence to a predatory relationship or cold indifference. Robert Kirk hints that in some covert way, we are all somehow working for these mysterious, largely unseen, non-human overlords.
I've been a preacher for more than 30 years. I've studied and taught through the book of Genesis many, many times in churches all around the world. And I've trained pastors in the skills of interpreting texts. And it's very clear they're not stories about gods. They're stories about the powerful ones in the Bible and the sky people, the Anunnaki in the Sumerian tablets.
The Trossachs, Scotland, 1692. The body of a 51-year-old man has been found on a hillside at Aberfoyle. Though the coroner's verdict is death by natural causes, other theories begin to circulate in the community. Many locals believe this man was killed as part of a cover-up.
People were saying that he'd been killed in order to put a stop to his investigative work. He was exposing a non-human presence in that part of Scotland and all around the world.
Others claimed that authorities had faked the man's death as a cover for his abduction by those he was exposing.
The local stories were that those who had taken and or killed him were not human.
Robert Kirk was the seventh son of Reverend James Kirk, the Episcopalian minister of Aberfoyle. Having gained his degree in theology at St. Andrews University and his master's at the University of Edinburgh, Robert Kirk served as the minister of Balquhidder, where he devoted himself to the pastoral care of his parish and the translation of the Bible into Gaelic.
Robert Kirk had a passion for Bible translation. And by his early 40s, he was already publishing fresh translations of the Bible, beginning with the Book of Psalms. Now, though Robert Kirk was very well regarded in Episcopalian circles for his scholarly approach, many Episcopalians struggled with his fresh translation of Hebrew words, which lacked the religious gloss that they were perhaps accustomed to. It brought some unfamiliar tones to the testimony of the ancients. In his journeys through the scriptures, Robert Kirk was very interested to note paranormal phenomena that seemed to recur through the Hebrew scriptures and on into the New Testament. In particular, he noted phenomena of remote viewing and precognition, what his parishioners would call the second sight.
At the age of 44, Robert Kirk was delighted to be appointed as minister to the town in which he'd grown up. He loved and respected the local people, and as a sincere and attentive pastor, he began to hear local stories from parishioners who in the present day were also experiencing phenomena of remote viewing and precognition, or second sight. These experiences seemed to go hand in hand with contact phenomena. Close encounters with mysterious non-human entities.
These stories, along with the strange phenomena in the Bible, provided a white rabbit for him into a whole realm of a forbidden story. His research continued and culminated in his writing the book The Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns, and Fairies, which he completed in 1691. But unfortunately, before it could be published more widely, he was found dead on Doon Hill. His book, The Secret Commonwealth, was finally published by Sir Walter Scott in 1815 and had existed probably in manuscript form only for the 124 years in between its writing and its publication. The word Robert Kirk used to describe these mysterious non-human beings of the local lore was the word Sith. It derives from the ancient Celtic word, pronounced She. She is a very interesting word for a number of reasons. Firstly, the ancient spelling that looks like Sitha or Seether is very similar to a word in a local dialect of Papua New Guinea, which means spirit dance. She carries a similar meaning because it describes a realm, a dimension of non-human entities whom we usually don't perceive in our normal waking state, but who are in fact intimately close with us all the time. Robert Kirk believed that the traditional stories of elves and fauns and fairies were not bedtime stories or fable, but were in reality the cultural knowledge of real encounters with real non-human entities. Where other scholars had listened to these stories and regarded them as fable or fiction, Robert Kirk listened with respect and understood that he was hearing something that was a matter of perplexity and concern to the people who had been experiencing these encounters for generations. The stories that Kirk listened to included stories of abduction, and when these stories were told him, he noted there was no sense of frivolity or ridicule associated with these stories. Families entrusted him with their stories in a tone of absolute gravity. Abduction stories like the ones that Kirk collected exist all around the world. The stories of Yemoya in the Caribbean, the stories of Duende and Encantos in the Philippines, Mamiwata stories of Ghana, West Africa, the story of Tylwyth Teg in Wales. These stories are clearly not the fictionalization of a human experience. There's no pattern like this in our familiar world, because the abduction stories that Robert Kirk was hearing were of people who were taken and then returned. And in many of these stories around the world, the theme is similar. People are not taken by force. They are enticed with promises of advancement, higher intelligence, greater health, longer life, greater prosperity, with these mysterious others who are often described as supremely beautiful people, human-looking, except for a detail here or there, an unusual skin color, the lack of a philtrum would be examples from the Filipino tellings. Now, if I were to say to you, today we're talking about Robert Kirk, the son of James Kirk, we're studying the Sith, you might say, Paul, I think you're mixing up your science fiction canons there. James Kirk, that's Star Trek, and he explores the world of strange new worlds and new civilizations in the Star Trek canon. The Sith, that's the canon of Star Wars. And I just wonder if the writers of those scripts may have had some knowledge of James Kirk and Robert Kirk and the Sith from the Secret Commonwealth, written in the 1600s. Writers do tend to be readers. Robert Kirk was clear he was not dealing in fiction, and he really was taking his life in his hands by putting this material out there. Even though he didn't get his book, The Secret Commonwealth, into wide circulation, people knew what his work was, and they knew what his conclusions were. And this was not long after a long period in British history where you could be beheaded or burned alive if your theology differed from that of the royal family. So this was quite a conservative world in which Robert Kirk was operating. But he insisted that what he was studying were real phenomena in real history that deserved real analysis and a real explanation.
But where did the non-human beings that Kirk described come from? And what did he believe they were? The title to his book gives us a clue. The Secret Commonwealth, an essay of the nature and actions of the subterranean and for the most part invisible people, heretofore going under the name of elves, fauns, and fairies, or the like. Among the Low Country Scots, as they are described by those who have the second sight, and now, to occasion further inquiry, collected and compared by a circumspect inquirer residing among the Scottish Irish in Scotland. The Secret Commonwealth described a range of non-human beings interacting with their human neighbours. He described small beings about the size of an 11-year-old who could somehow cloak their presence. These appeared to have no emotionality or fellow feeling towards human beings. Kirk described larger and more capable beings, the Sith. He referred to their inexplicable ability to fly and to ping in and out of visibility. Some, he argued, could blend so well with their human neighbors as to pass for humans themselves. Others were involved in generations-long programs of abduction and hybridization. Some abductees were returned alive and some dead, yet others were never seen again. Some of these beings would predate upon humans, deriving some kind of chemical food from the bodies or blood of their terrified contactees. Others could shapeshift and manipulate the senses of those who encountered them. Their interests in humanity appeared to range from a desire to nurture human intelligence to a predatory relationship or cold indifference. Robert Kirk hints that in some covert way, we are all somehow working for these mysterious, largely unseen, non-human overlords. Reflecting on Robert Kirk's work, perhaps when we encounter predatory dynamics or cold indifference towards the welfare of ordinary human beings among the elites who make our public policy, maybe we should be concerned about how far the influence of the Sith might extend in the geopolitics of today. These are all hints in Robert Kirk's work in The Secret Commonwealth. His work was theological, grounded in biblical texts with biblical examples. It was scholarly, making reference to the work of Pythagoras, Socrates, and Plato. And it was deeply pastoral, being rooted in the lived experience of those in his part of the world, which he related to stories and testimony from further afield. As to what exactly these strange non-human entities were, Robert Kirk speculated. Perhaps, he speculated, somewhere between human and angel. Now, when you put all these elements together, to the modern mind, they sound remarkably similar to stories out of the 20th and 21st century of close encounters. But whereas we might use the language of aliens or extraterrestrials, Kirk had a different thought. He believed that many of these entities resided in subterranean bases. And this echoes the report that you'll hear from the Filipino narratives, from Western African narratives, from the Welsh narrative, the Caribbean narratives, suggesting that those who do the abduction operate out of underwater bases. Where they agree is in the idea that those beings responsible for the abductions have been on planet Earth for a very, very long time. Kirk argued for this not only on the basis of indigenous story, but of notes that he found in the Hebrew Scriptures through his work in Bible translation. Now, I have a certain fellow feeling with Robert Kirk. We're both pastors.
We both worked in the Episcopalian Church. For 33 years, I was involved in church-based ministry as a theological educator, as a church doctor, and an archdeacon in the Anglican Church in Australia. That's one down from a bishop. And it's unusual for a senior churchman to step forward and say, I think that in the Bible we're finding notes about non-human presences that were real entities, what today you and I might call extraterrestrials, what Robert Kirk called the Sith. And so we both stuck our necks out in a similar way. Robert Kirk derived a lot of information from Indigenous story, and I've made it part of my approach to glean Indigenous stories from cultures all around the world, and in particular, cultures that have maintained their initiation traditions. And it's during initiation that much of the information surrounding our non-human company is shared with the forthcoming generations. Also, like Robert Kirk, my work in ministry has exposed me to paranormal phenomena, including encounters with non-human entities, farsight, and future sight. So in that sense, we're in a similar world. But Robert Kirk was a man of tremendous courage in pushing these ideas forward in the 1600s, so close to a time when heterodox views came with such a great cost. His intention was to publish his work, The Secret Commonwealth, more widely, but of course he passed away before he was able to do that. And he said that he was undertaking his research as a circumspect inquirer and to occasion further inquiry. And that's very much my heart as well, as I put out Escaping from Eden, The Scars of Eden, Echoes of Eden, The Eden Conspiracy, and The Invasion of Eden. And in my work, I found Robert Kirk a great inspiration because he uses language which many of his peers dismissed as pure superstition or as the ignorance of uneducated people north of the border. And Robert Kirk stood against that kind of prejudice and encouraged people to listen with a more scientific ear, a more open ear, a more open mind. And thanks to the work of Sir Walter Scott, we are able to read his collated research all these years later. 333 years since he first completed The Secret Commonwealth, it repeats its call to us today. It invites us to listen without ridicule and without prejudice to one another so that we can hear the folkloric layer of information from our own cultures, wherever we live. And it's my firm belief that if we're willing to do that and listen to one another's stories with an open ear, we will very quickly learn that we live in a soup of non-human company, all kinds of beings interacting with us from the other side, from the Shay, from the Sith. And I'd encourage you to test it out. I don't believe there would be a family circle or a friendship circle anywhere that if we sat down and openly shared our stories of strange, anomalous, unexplained phenomena, that we wouldn't have a story, each one of us, from our immediate circle, of experiences such as the ones described by the Secret Commonwealth.